Well, hello, Gundamaniacs. Welcome to the Gundam Explained show live. This is the weekly live show where Steven and I sit at our computers or our second homes, our home within our home. So it seems like, and we just talk about giant robots because that is kind of a cool pastime in 2024. Steven, how you doing?
Good. I think everyone in the audience will be glad to know that I've forgiven you for our previous beef.
I know. Us and our beef, huh?
I know. Actually, it never lasts.
No.
I don't know how to quit you.
Well, one thing is when someone brings up Taco Bell, I pause for a moment. I love Taco Bell, but I do that thing where I only go like once every couple months because I think then it especially at my age, it kind of destroys my digestive system. And then it takes about a weekend of recovery. I don't know about you.
I am fortunate that I don't get that that problem, but I do appreciate the jokes. I think I saw on Twitter the other day someone posted an image of a Japanese public restroom, and they were like, the biggest crime against humanity is the fact that Japan has the nicest toilets in the world, but they don't have a Taco Bell.
That is pretty good. I bet it's related. No, but I feel bad for no one. I love using his name out of context of everything. But no, he has to drive 3 hours to go to a Taco Bell.
That's wild.
I mean,
I can't imagine.
I could see that would help me out because it's like, oh, it's been 60 days. Let's road trip.
Right. No kidding. That was my father-in-law once told me the story because, I mean, he was, he was 74 when he passed away. He was telling me about the first time he went to a Taco Bell. And of course, like, he was from New York. And so, like, he had to drive all the way to New Mexico for, like, his first taste of Taco Bell because obviously it wasn't like a nationwide chain then.
Wow.
And he was like, it was like the best thing ever. And I'm sure it was because back then it was like probably authentic tacos and not, you know, what it is now.
You know, not that I'm close to that age, but I remember in the early 90s getting Taco Bell and it had a different taste to it.
Oh, for sure.
It almost like had a more biting meat or biting. It was like there was more bite to the flavors. And then over time, it just becomes this big thing of junk where it's like, yeah, get me it's a tortilla shell with the outer soft with the cheese, nacho cheese between to hold it together.
There you go.
I love that stuff.
Oh, man. Yeah. What monstrosity can we make with fast food today?
Yeah. And you know what? It's funny. There's this guy I follow, a video game journalist named Dan Reichert. Used to be a Game Informer. Used to work for one of the wrestling organizations, now Giant Bomb. He got married at a Taco Bell.
Interesting.
Through Taco Bell. It was an official.
That's amazing.
Not that I'm jealous of him, but
I'm a little jealous. If it were one of those, like, you know, there was like that 90s aesthetic of the Taco Bells with like the purple seats and like everything was like purple and teal. That's the Taco Bell I know and love.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. And it was after that where then the Chihuahua came in. That's still early. You know, you go to Taco Bell. Yeah. okay, I'm getting hungry.
Yeah, the Taco Bell Explained show.
No one's asking what actually is that intro song. I've always wondered. Sounds like Guilty Gear, which is an amazing guess. Amazing guess, because I say the reason I like it is because it sounds like Guilty Gear music. It's from the Fist of the North Star video game, the first one.
Ken's Rage.
Yeah, that's right. On 360, and that's one of those, and I might be mispronouncing it, Musou game.
Oh, yeah.
Even though it's like a little scaled down a little bit, but it's supposed to be that same type of thing. Love the game. I've actually played through it multiple times. It's crazy. Like, isn't there always that random game that no one really cares about, but for some reason you play it?
Yeah, you just latch onto it. For me, I think that game is Kengo 9. Are you familiar with this one?
No.
This is it's a fighting game, but it's samurai. It's all historically like, it's all real samurai, like Ryuma and Miyamoto Musashi, all of like the famous samurai of the feudal Japanese era. And like, it's such a timing based and like parry style fighting game. Basically, two swipes of a sword kills you, which is like realistic, you know?
Yeah.
But it's a very like, okay, you know, I'm going to wait and see how they attack first. And then kind of, it's so much fun. If you never tried it, Kengo 9.
Yeah.
It was on 360.
Okay. Remind me that later. I'll ask you later because I like to find obscure stuff like that. Yeah.
But yeah, you mentioned Musou, which, like, you know, you said this morning on the Blue Gamer show that there's a new Dynasty Warriors game coming out, right?
Yeah, so there might be an announcement. Was it? Yeah, it was the leaked list of the PlayStation showcase. State to Play.
Yeah.
That's going to happen right after this show, actually.
There you go.
I'm actually interested in see what's going to be on there.
Let's just go for 2 hours so that we can cover the show.
You know, I was thinking about that. So I don't want to get anyone's hopes up, but I was thinking, because I've been working all day and then I'm doing this, but like if right after this I want to watch State of Play, and if I feel like it, I might stream on Blue Gamer. I don't know.
Cool. Yeah, for sure.
But
man, what we need is another Gundam Dynasty Warriors game. That's the announcement we.
So that would be cool if that's actually what they mean by it. Like the leak, it's a Dynasty Warriors game, but and then it's Gundam. Like it would. Yeah. I don't think they would say that now because of the Gunpla, or they wouldn't because of the Gundam Breaker game coming out. But that's a good idea. So no one. Okay, speaking of Guilty Gear, actually, have you played the Fist of North Star game? The Guilty Gear folks made for PS2. Funny you asked that, because just 3 days ago I downloaded it for my emulator. Because I forgot where I saw it. I think I know what it is. So I think I've told you guys, I have like one of my little retro handheld consoles like hooked up to a monitor in my office. So it automatically runs like videos of every game. And it played the video of that game. And I'm like, oh my God, this looks great. It's Guilty Gear, but Fist of North Star? And
that's sweet.
Yeah, it's interesting how it has the video, but not the game. I don't get how that works. I'm not going to ask. I don't know. Okay, well, yeah, this is a Gundam show, if you guys didn't know.
We'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. We're going to talk a few things. There's some interesting news about Seed Freedom. We'll talk about a 90s dark sci-fi cartoon that I think is comparable to Gundam, maybe. Maybe after we visit it, we'll get to that. And then, you know, something else I wanted to talk about too. But real quick, actually look in the chat. No one is in the chat. No one is absolutely in the chat.
No one.
Kyle, shout out to Kyle. Good to see you. Plague Doc. Good to see you. Jamkel X, Ian. Awesome. We got a good crew here. Okay. Yeah. So here's something that's interesting. Sony, when they were talking about their filmmaking, speaks on it as they don't want to be a streaming service. There's that talks of them buying Paramount Plus, but they don't want the streaming part of it. They just want the IP, because what Sony wants to do is build IP and then have them on platforms. Like, you know,
Where have I heard this before from Sony? Perhaps something to do with the 90s and the early 2000s, buying up libraries of music, and then...
Oh, okay.
Because you remember, like, Michael Jackson bought up, like, the entire Beatles catalog, and it was like, you know, Sony came after him, and...
And you know, the Offspring. They had to fight with Sony to get all their music. Okay,
and to this day, Sony is still persecuting YouTubers for using music. Like, that's where the copyright... like claim system on YouTube comes from is like Sony BMG always tagging you.
I'm glad you brought this up, because I actually didn't, because this is related to what I'm about.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Sony is really big about like consolidating IPs and properties. So,
Crunchyroll.
Yeah.
They now own the biggest, which is interesting. They don't want to get into streaming, but they own the biggest streaming service for anime, and kind of almost the only. There's others, but like a lot of times those other services have stuff you can stream on, like Freevee or whatever those things are. Yeah. So it's interesting, because Sony is also big into being an anime production house. They're building tools that they want to be like the Volume for anime. And Sony did that recent corporate thing. Was it last week or maybe beginning of this week? And they were talking about it. And I think a lot of companies right now are making a lot of decisions based on the unknown. They don't really know what's happening in the economy right now. But to me, it seems like a bad idea that Sony owns Crunchyroll. You know, and I remember hearing this before. Even Robert brought it up to me one time, like, hey, Adam, what do you think of that? I'm like, I don't know. But then I heard they shut down Right Stuff Anime.
Yeah, which, okay. You know, that's funny, because there's a big argument going on Twitter right now about legal ways to watch anime. And obviously, you know, I'm a big proponent of physical media, and Right Stuff was one of the last distributors of physical, like, anime DVDs and Blu-rays.
Yeah.
And so it's like, without them, all you're left with is streaming.
Yeah. And so I feel like this is weird because it almost tells me that there's not some sort of, I don't know how I'm trying to go at this, but it seems like anime is like taken hostage.
It does feel like we're being held at gunpoint.
Yeah. Cause it's like, and I just think of it in a, I don't know how I'm trying to explain what I'm trying to say. It's like, okay, here, this will actually go into one of the news articles. So let me just share my screen there. So Sunrise has announced that it will bring Mobile Suit Gundam Seed Freedom to Netflix and Prime Video in early June 2024 in Japan. So at least it's going to be on Netflix and Prime, which is a good idea. I heard it's going to come out here, but on Crunchyroll. So my issue goes back to the same thing that's happened before. Why would any company release their anime on Crunchyroll? Now, yeah, if you want to get it in front of people that already consume anime, but wouldn't you want to broaden your audience? So that was really smart of them to have the Gundam stuff that they did on Netflix. You know, Sunrise did that. Yeah. But I'm just hoping then when the Seed Freedom gets released here, it actually is like on Netflix or Prime Video. If it's on Crunchyroll, great. I subscribe to that. But I would, for the best of everyone, I would rather it be somewhere to kind of give it that bump, you know?
But like, region locking content is so stupid as a concept anyway, because, you know, you can get free VPNs and get the content somehow. So it's like, you know, these negotiations and these agreements where it's like, okay, well, in this country, we're going to have it available on these platforms, but over here, we're going to have it available on this platform. You know, it's, you know, you just have to wonder, like, what's the point?
You're exactly right. Because I don't understand that. Like, and this has started a long time ago. I know from like when I used to talk about being like a film snob, like at the end of high school and right when I got out of high school, I was buying all these foreign movies. I was importing them, and it required me to have a DVD player that could play that region.
But right.
I wonder, where does that start? It's like the same thing with the power plugs. I wonder if it's one of those things like in development where you'd already built it this way. So then you just kind of add on top of it just to get by, but and really you don't need to do it anymore. I feel like that's kind of what's going on here.
Yeah, it reminds me of that scene from Tropic Thunder where Jay Baruchel's character is ranting about like Blu-ray versus HD DVDs, and it's like, well, you know, a lot of people thought that the Blu-ray was going to be successful because of the PlayStation 3, but in actuality, what it comes down to is porn. And it's like, because it's, you know, it's the same thing with like Betamax versus VHS. You know, there's so many of these types of platform battles, right? And to your point, I think that this kind of consolidation of IP and franchises under one company, it has less to do with trying to monopolize the content as it is that they don't know what kind of hardware people are going to be using 10, 15 years from now. It seems to me like, you know, you're not going to double down on making a game specifically for the Nintendo Switch when you don't know if they're going to come out with another console that has different cartridges, and then you're going to have to start from scratch again. You don't know whether people are going to have Blu-ray players or whether they're going to just be streaming on their phones. So, and it goes back to what you were saying about like Xbox and Game Pass. Is it's like they're not counting on you to buy an Xbox. That's why they have the Game Pass. That's why they allow you to play on PC, is because they're like, I don't know if we can double down on the hardware, because I don't think people are going to be bound to hardware for much longer.
Yeah, and I was just reading this morning how like 50% of PlayStation users, it's like 50-50 PS4 and PS5. And what an analyst was saying is that Sony's biggest competitor is actually the PS4. And what it is people just have their PS4 to watch Netflix or Amazon. And then since they're there, they'll play Call of Duty or Fortnite. Like, most people don't need any more than that, like, which says a lot about how awesome the PS4 is. But it's one of those things where maybe these companies, and this actually, you know, goes with how anime, I know we're talking about video games, but I think it's the same with anime. When it comes to these media properties, these companies need to come up with more unique ways to consume their content. And look, I think we'll see that soon. It's just like how you can pretty much plug any type of device into any TV. Eventually, it's going to be where you could be on your phone and maybe stream anything to any TV, you know, eventually.
Yeah. Cause I mean, like the Fire TV stick, for instance, like the Amazon or like the Google Chromecast, all of those different devices that you plug into your TV. Now they just come on smart TVs. Yeah. Like,
exactly. Where you don't even, it's like so little barrier to entry, which is kind of this thing here. So like with the PS4, what could Sony then choose to do with a PS6 to not make the same mistake with the PS5? Not that it's a mistake, and the PS5 is awesome, but obviously there's something there that people want that would be new, and the answer to that is a handheld. There's rumors Sony's making a handheld. That's probably the next step, you know?
Handheld would probably be the way to go. I mean, I was just thinking about this the other day because, you know, as I was, I typically will go through, like, my Amazon Prime and, like, look at what gaming is available on the Luna and stuff like that. And I was like, wait a second. So I can kick on my PS4, and if I wanted to play, you know, Fallout New Vegas or Fallout 3, like, I'd have to pay for them and download them. Or I could play them for free on Amazon Prime Video right now.
Yeah.
Like, with a Luna controller. Like,
okay, so that's a good part, because that's that other barrier to entry that's being lowered, is these, like, YouTube or Netflix already having, like, the games kind of, like, built in. So it's, it's just... So this then goes back to the anime thing, because I think anime is one of those IPs that is taken hostage. And I think Ian says it interesting way. He says Japan still operating under the anime is ours until it is something that is important to them that needs to be seen by everyone. And I wonder culturally, and I don't think I know the answer, but it seems to make sense that Japan would have this kind of protection over their anime, you know, even though they don't own anime, Japan is known for that. It's ingrained in the culture, and it's been shared across the world. And, you know, at the same time, Sony is a Japanese company, and for owning Crunchyroll, that's like huge. So to me, it almost seems like that's almost like a Japanese initiative, cultural initiative, that Sony as a Japanese company feels it's like their responsibility to kind of control anime. That's why then they're coming out with the tools for animators to use. It's like the Unreal Engine 5, but for anime. So, and I forget what it's called. It's called like, oh, I think I had this. Yeah. It was like Sony to launch Anime Academy as audience for Japanese animation grows.
That's an interesting, I don't know why they have images. Courtesy of Crunchyroll.
I think it says Anime Awards in the back, but
I can't read what's in the back.
It's blocked.
I think wasn't there that there's that movie with Adam Driver coming out where it's like he plays like an Italian automaker and he pushes some model off of his car because he's like, you can't see the logo of my car.
Oh yeah, isn't it like the
Ferrari?
Ferrari. There you go. Yeah, that's funny. Okay, Anaplex, which is a creator and distributor of Japanese animation, is currently a subsidiary of Sony Music Entertainment Japan. It comes full circle.
Yep.
Music. So I think what we're gleaning from this really is there's more of this kind of corporate sort of initiative of kind of owning and controlling the IP.
Yeah.
Over what is best to be delivered to an audience. So this is an example of where I would then talk bad or talk trash and be like, that's probably not good.
If I can rephrase it in a way that'll make sense for our audience, Sony is the Devil Gundam, and the Dark Army is all of the IPs and franchises that they're collecting in order to go out and and seize control of the world doing battle with Domon.
Dude, excellent analogy. So I hope you guys got it then. No.
There you go.
Yeah, but it's funny, though, how it all goes back to Sony Music, which you had brought up early on. That was like an initiative of Sony. So for Sony, their initiative is to kind of create and own a bunch of IP that then they can just distribute and sell, which I'm not saying it's bad to be in that business. But I feel like, again, as someone that's newer to anime, it is actually hard to find and watch any anime I want. And that's kind of disappointing.
And the worst part about it is, you know, obviously, Kyle's probably familiar with this. And, you know, I follow some of Lewis Rossman's videos and things about like right to repair and like times that piracy becomes ethical. You know, there's this thing where in the EULAs, the end user license agreements of a lot of these services that we use, your purchase doesn't mean that you have purchased something. You have not purchased a file. You've not purchased a movie or a game. What you have purchased is the license to use that product on the platform. And so, of course, you know, if I bought a movie on Amazon Prime, you know, if I stop paying for Amazon Prime, I can no longer watch that movie.
Yeah.
Same thing goes here, where it's like, if I were to buy an anime on Amazon Prime and Sony decides that they don't want to license that IP to Amazon anymore, they want to license it, you know, through Netflix or move it over to like a Crunchyroll platform or something like that, then does that, even though I paid for the product on one platform, does that mean that they can take it away because it's available on another one? Like,
yeah, it's funny. And that has happened. It's crazy. It's even back when I also had Funimation, I preferred it because it had more dubs.
Yeah.
But then slowly things were being removed and then they would be put on Crunchyroll, but with no dub. So again, like the accessibility, I don't see anything good out of all this coming out. Like, I don't follow the anime scene outside of Gundam. So I don't know, like, are anime fans up in arms? Is this, or am I overblowing the whole thing?
I mean, to me, it's a problem. I tried to sit down and watch Dragon Ball with my daughter the other night. And what's interesting is, like, I think it's on Hulu, the Dragon Ball subtitled is available, but Dragon Ball Z is available dubbed. So I was like, so I can watch one series, but I can't watch the prequel series. Like, it's.
Yeah, it's, I tell you, it's a bad way to go about it, because if they're wanting to get more people into it to sell more merchandise, you're just limiting the people that can access this IP. And I don't know. I don't get it. So it'll be interesting to see. So what I'm going to do is, based on this next Seed Freedom movie, how it gets, depending on how it gets released, I might make a video speaking of like the concerns of, you know, is this concern with anime? Is this concern with Sunrise? Is it related? Is it not? You know, like, you know, Cuckoo's Doan's Island is the thing I keep thinking, going back to. Like, that made no sense. It's like you make something you want to make money of, but then you don't allow people to give you money for it.
It just, it seems silly. Like, maybe we need to get away from, like, the whole streaming, subscription. Oh, well,
yes.
So they'll never stop with the subscription model. But to me, I feel like the best way to do it would be to have like an a la carte thing where just like everything's a rental.
So,
you know,
it's happening. So, and we might've talked about this, how there are, some of the, streaming services are merging to have a package that costs old school cable. And the fact that they're also adding there's going to be more live TV where they're going to have, you know, the live. So here's something interesting. Like, Pluto is one that does it. I know, I think, is it Peacock that does it, where you can just go to the live channels and just watch live.
Yeah.
And Disney already said they're going to start doing that here pretty soon. We already know that they release popular shows 1 week at a time. I can see them going back to it premieres live at this time and make it a primetime thing.
Yeah.
And then it's available to watch later, because I think what that does is it kind of brings back that community aspect of everyone right now in the world could be watching this at the same time. Not everyone, but everyone that would be watching it would be at the same time.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's something cool to that. So,
And as someone who works in marketing, I can tell you that there is a push for that, because obviously, you know, Hulu, Amazon, like all these streaming platforms are now starting to serve ads unless you pay an extra premium. So if you were to be able to guarantee me primetime audiences again, which we haven't had since like the 90s and the 2000s, because this always cracks me up, is because people always talk about like, oh, well, you know, the old G4, like nobody ever watched G4. And I was like, no, the problem is that I was like, we all watched G4.
Yeah.
The problem is that people were looking at primetime ratings. And yes, G4 would finish dead last in primetime ratings. But if you look at their primary demographic, it was like 18 to 24 year old men. 18 to 24 year old men in college are not sitting with their families at 8 p.m. watching, you know, Olivia Munn and Kyle Pereira. They're watching it at 2 in the morning. So, like, I want to see the ratings numbers from like 2 to 4 in the morning and then tell me that G4 had no viewership. Like,
yeah, that's a good point. And you brought up Olivia Munn. Beautiful woman. I had a crush on her when she was on that show.
Yeah, we all did. It was a time.
Cool, she was in a Predator movie, even though it was bad. That's kind of cool.
She was in an X-Men movie.
Psylocke. Oh my God. That's what I think got ingrained into me. Perfect looking Psylocke. Okay. Real quick. We're going to change the subject, and Kyle, you're going to say something. If you are there, Psylocke is the best representation visually of a comic character in a live action movie.
I don't know if I would die on that hill. I think that looks wise, she nailed it, but, like, you know, she was never a great actress anyway.
Okay. I would agree with that, but then there's some weird stuff. So there's some times, and I think this has to go back to directors. Maybe I think directors can help in that regard.
Yeah.
Newsroom, and there was something else I watched with her where she did great. It's like, what? Same actress? I think that's what it is. Like, you can get someone, and if they're coachable.
Yeah.
But some people don't need the coaching. Or some people can just be Tom Cruise, and then that's all they need to do.
Yeah, there you go. Well, and that brings up, you know, to bring it full circle back to Gundam, there was a conversation going around on Twitter where someone was complaining about, like, the last third of the original series, saying that it was, like, a struggle to get through. Like, some of the episodes kind of dragged on, and the pacing was off, and all of these things. And, you know, of course, I had to chime in and be like, well, yeah, their animation director got sick and was in the hospital for the last third of the series. Yeah. And, like, Yoshiyuki Tomino, like, God bless him, he's a fantastic creator, but he was not a great director by his own admission. And so, like, those last episodes struggled because it just goes to show that it doesn't matter how smart or how talented you are. If you're put in a role that isn't suited to you, you're not going to succeed. And
it's a really good point. Really good point, because I do think we tend to hear from the news and all that where, like, an executive steps in and then they're making all these changes. And it's like, okay, I can understand them wanting to make changes, but does this person really know what to do? And then we see, oh, for the DCEU, we're going to have two CEOs, or however they did that, James Gunn and that other guy. Sony, right. They're doing the two CEOs, which I think we're starting to get to an age now where it's like, yeah, this stuff is very complex. That's why companies now have chief security officers, chief data officers, you know, at the executive level. When it comes to decision making that gets put into motion, you have to have people that can specify in something. And that's a good point with Gundam, because, yeah, it was that, like, even though Tomino knows what his vision is, the technical aspects were missing of, how, you know, and I saw that discussion you had, though. That was a good one on Twitter.
And that was, you know, I think that exactly the fact that you probably have one kind of creative visionary and then one sort of, you know, P&L budget balancing bean counter type that is there to counteract the creative vision. I think that that's how you can get that unique blend of, like, that's like the perfect C-level executive is somebody that has both.
So personally, I'm happy PlayStation's doing it. You know, we'll see what happens. And I want to go back to this point Ian made earlier. Does 0079 sell? I feel like that's how they approach that release. And it seems like that, right? Like, that's actually a good point. It's like, yeah, 0079 is the older, even though they still come out with new stories.
Yeah.
And they didn't promote it that well, yet there's a Gundam and Red Zaku and Call of Duty and a Funko Pop. But Cuckoo's Doan's Island just got the silent release. That's a good observation, Ian, and I don't think even Bandai knows.
Yeah, and I think the problem is they have too many of that other, like, the left brain executives, the guys that don't have any creative vision, the guys that don't have the connection with the audience and the connection with the material. If you have too many of those people in positions of power, they don't understand what's resonating with fans and what doesn't, so they just kind of are just throwing things at the wall and see what sticks. And then that's where, because they don't, because there's no guaranteed money at the end of any of these particular initiatives that they do, that's why they're having to be so conservative and so protective over their IP and like gobble up all of these IPs. Cause they're like, I just don't know that I can double down on any one of these franchises and make money. And it's like, well, maybe you could, if you had someone that actually cared about the franchises running them.
That those are all really good points, because Sony said that themselves. Microsoft said that themselves when it came to video games. It's like, we have to double down on what's actually working. Yeah. And maybe approach new IPs with the smaller budget. This new Jurassic Park movie they're making, did you hear that they cast Mahershala Ali, if I'm saying his name right? That means no Blade, which, look, good. I would rather leave it open for Wesley Snipes. So
yeah, I mean, they already made a perfect Blade. There's no reason to go back and like retread that material.
Unless Wesley Snipes is there and he's going to choreograph fight scenes, then I'm all for it.
Well, but I think he still has a tax bill to pay, so he would definitely come back if asked.
But what's interesting is also the rumor is he's in the Wolverine and Deadpool movie.
That would be pretty cool.
You know what? And let me just say something random that would be the greatest thing of all time. If Wesley Snipes was in a movie as Blade and Bruce Campbell was in a movie as Ash and they were together.
So like Blade has to go fight Deadites.
And yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Ash is helping him. I mean, I drew these. I'll show you guys the artwork. When I was in high school, I drew these battles all the time. A Blade and Ash fighting zombies. I just had to, because this whole news with Blade going on, because there's a rumor of Wesley Snipes being in that Deadpool Wolverine movie. And then we hear that Mahershala Ali is now in this Jurassic movie, meaning he's going to be booked for filming. So they're not going to do that Blade movie. So does that mean they'll do a proper Wesley Snipes Blade Disney movie?
You know, I'm curious about this Deadpool Wolverine movie coming out, because it seems to me like they're going the same route that they did with that Flash movie, where it was like, let's just load it up with cameos and like get the member berries going. And what's so sad to me is that the Flash movie was so good if they just left all that stuff out.
I keep like, hearing it too. I didn't watch it yet.
Yeah.
But I keep hearing that.
Yeah. You should definitely watch it when you get a chance. It's, I think that it had such potential. Like the core story of the Flash movie is perfect. But then when they started dumping in all of these cameos and like, oh, the team ups and stuff like that, that's when it all kind of went south. So,
you know, I'm glad you brought up the Deadpool and Wolverine thing, because here's something, and I want to get your thoughts on it, because I've talked about this like when I talk about what sequels do in movies.
Yeah.
From what it sounds like, this Deadpool and Wolverine movie is almost going to be a meta movie. It's not actually going to be, I don't know, I could be wrong, but from what I hear and the leaks and the rumors, it's like, or when you see the 20th Century Fox logo as part of the set, then it's like, okay, is this kinda movie weird. Really an in-universe movie, or is this kind of like a scary movie, a Hot Shots of superhero movies?
Yeah, exactly.
And I almost think that's what kind of it
always
is.
What Deadpool was, right?
Like true, and that's true. Although I liked how they did it in the first two, where the story is still about what's happening in the world. He's just commenting on it. Where I feel like in this new movie, the story's going to be about Fox and the MCU, that business. Like, and on one hand, maybe that's a cool movie to have in the middle of these like 20 MCU movies, where one of them is just more of a commentary on the whole thing. But it's one of those instances where they have Wolverine and Deadpool in a movie. Make this awesome. If they make it too jokey. Sorry to cut you off real quick.
No, go ahead.
To add to that, they showed the CinemaCon thing where it was supposed to be awesome, and it's just Wolverine saying the F word. Hugh Jackman saying the F word like five times. And I'm like, I guess that's shocking, but how is that interesting?
Yeah, I mean, I'm getting real tired of the self-awareness of Marvel characters and that sort of thing. And it works when we know that like there is no partnership with MCU and Sony, and like the Deadpool movie could poke fun at those things because A, Deadpool's character does that. He does break the fourth wall. Yeah. And B, we know that it's not being done like as a partnership. But now that all of them are kind of working together, then it's like, you know, it no longer, it loses that meta humor because it's like, well, you're just doing it because everyone expects it. Like,
exactly. To make the joke, oh, Disney wouldn't like this. Disney wouldn't like, I'm going to hate that.
Right.
And like one line, sure, is funny, but so far, everything they've kind of shown in the marketing is that. And then like having, even when Kevin Feige went on stage, he said the F word. Like that really, ooh, during CinemaCon, like that really does anything. It's anyway. So that kind of scares me because yeah, we have Hugh Jackman as Wolverine when Ryan Reynolds is Deadpool, when that shouldn't have even happened in the first place, you know, the Deadpool and the first Wolverine Origins was horrible. It's like, how do you, but it's
right.
So, and then that's the thing, at the end of the day, it could be meta enough that I appreciate what it's doing. And then I'm like, oh, okay. If they tried to then take it a little more seriously, it would have probably fell flat, you know. I don't know. And that's the thing. I didn't read many Deadpool comics at all. I really only knew the character Wolverine. I had known, sure, Deadpool just because he would say funny shit, and you know, in the kid, yeah, because I think that it was Deadpool and Cable. That was a comic series, I think, in the mid 2000s or something that I stumbled upon, and I was like, oh, this is awesome.
Which that, I mean, one of my favorite artists, Riley Brown, was on that book for a really long time. Oh. And yeah, I mean, that the tone of that book worked because you had like, you know, Deadpool being the silly boy, and then like Cable is this super serious, probably the most, like I would say between him and Magneto, probably the most serious characters in the X-books.
He doesn't even get as emotional as Magneto.
Yeah.
Actually, in the X-Men 97, it seemed like the most emotional I ever saw him. You know, when he was like, Mom, I'm too late or something. I forget what. Yeah, it's anyway. But anyway, I'm going to go see that movie in the theaters regardless.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about something else here real quick.
Now for something completely different.
Yeah, actually. 90s dark sci-fi cartoon was supposed to be an American Gundam. So let's see if that's true, or they're just saying that to get people to like me to click on it. Before the rise of dedicated networks to cartoons, the Saturday morning and after school animation blocks were the day's highlight for most kids. We got to enjoy such classics as Denver, The Last Dinosaur. Oh my God, that unlocked a memory. Now the theme song is in my head. Cowboys of Moon Mesa, Dino Saucers, Brave Star, and not one, but two Sonic the Hedgehog cartoons. Yeah, that was crazy. Back then, I was so into Sonic, and there was two cartoons. I'm like, holy crap. as fun as those shows were, story and character development weren't their selling point, which is what Exo Squad was created to change about American animation. And so I haven't watched Exo Squad since the few episodes I saw on TV, you know? So, and then seeing this shot right here showing like these ships in space battling, it's like, that is my thing. This is cool.
Oh, those toys were fantastic.
Yes. Oh, I still have Phaeton, the main bad guy, his purple one. So, airing from 93 through 94 for 52 episodes, which is pretty good. That's like a Gundam season.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a season of Gundam.
Exo Squad was the response of Jeff Siegel, the head writer from Challenge of the GoBots, to match the quality output of Japanese anime. Typically, American cartoons were structured more like sitcoms than dramas, and the status quo would always be reset by the end of the 22-minute episode. Taking heavy inspiration from Mobile Suit Gundam, the original storyboard designs for the series even refer to it as American anime. Okay, I didn't know that.
See, I think it could have been successful if they didn't get the guy who did GoBots. Like,
hey, the guy had the right idea.
You get the guy to not that knocked off Transformers to then knock off Gundam. Like,
I want to ask you because I'm not too familiar with Exo Squad beyond when I watched it when I was a kid, but like, is it one of those things where it's kind of like Gundam where it aired and no one really cared, but it's actually really good? It's just.
Yeah, I guess it would. I would say that. I mean, I don't remember much about it.
It could be myself. Really bad, to be honest.
I was going to say, I remember more about the toys themselves than the actual show. But I mean, it does seem like a conglomeration of a lot of those anime tropes, right?
Yeah. Okay, and so, yeah, so Exo Squad is set in the future after humanity has colonized and terraformed Venus and Mars, where the Neo Sapiens, a bioengineered slave race used by humanity for manual labor, have launched an uprising taking control of the planets. The exosuit pilots that form Able Squad, and their allies form the core of humanity's fight against the Neo Sapiens. So again, it goes to, there's that trope of, you know, they're not humans, but humans versus aliens. In the case of Gundam, it's, you know, new types versus, you know, non-new types. So sure. It's already leading in with that, where it's because someone's different, you know, that then there's this fight. Neo Sapiens is a cool name.
It is pretty sweet.
So unusual for an American cartoon of the time, Exo Squad treats the war completely seriously with characters dying.
G.I. Joe treated war completely seriously. Come on.
But with characters dying and multiple episodes of fighting, followed by more episodes of cleanup and what to do as an occupying force. This is making me want to go back. I mean, just even look at this screen. Like, these aren't like my favorite types of mech designs, but it's still awesome mech designs, you know.
Oh, for that time. But when those wings flap out, man, those.
I love that one. I know. J.T. Marsh was that guy's name. While the long form storytelling was something unique and groundbreaking, what wasn't new and different was that each member of Able Squad had a different exo frame that they would pilot, from the winged blue frame used by squad leader J.T. Marsh to the green reconnaissance frame of Alec DeLeon and the extra large two pilot vehicle design of Diana and Thrax's frame. It's clear. Now, while Exo Squad broke storytelling ground, it was still designed to sell toys, which, same with Gundam, you know.
I mean, is there anything that isn't?
Exactly, yeah. The colorful designs of the Exo frames cover the dark nature of the story, with Episode 22, Fireship, remaining a standout that has stuck with me for decades. After being betrayed, Able Squad is captured and held on board a captured ship rigged with explosives as a booby trap for the Terran leadership. I was 10, and here was an episode with the heroes contemplating mortality and debating a plan to explode the ship prematurely so that no one else would die. See, that's neat stuff.
So, but like you said, you know, those are the types of things that were engaged with, like, the X-Men TV show back in the 90s, too. Like, I don't think that this is an idea that's, I mean, granted, that was later. Like, it was 97 versus this was, what, 92, 93?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I just don't think that it was that groundbreaking of an idea to have like a serious cartoon.
You're right. It's not that that's groundbreaking, but it's just that like it just wouldn't be handled well because that juxtaposition too much of the toy part. But it's like, I think they think too much about it. You don't need to think about it because I think George Lucas said it, the 12-year-old that's in all of us will like the thing for what it is, you know?
Oh yeah.
So in 1993, this was unlike anything else on the air. And while, yes, the hero survived this time, that wasn't always the case. Characters would routinely be injured and unseen for episodes at a time as they recovered. Nameless pilots would die in almost every episode. And there was a very palpable sense of dread as the war ramped up. And it was clear that not everyone would be making it home alive. And then no matter how dark the story became, the animation remained spectacular throughout. But it was the same studio in South Korea that handled X-Men 92 and Batman. Holy crap. I didn't even know the X-Men and Gargoyles Batman studio was the same.
Yeah.
The two best cartoons of the 90s.
Yeah, for sure.
That's
what, and Gargoyles. Like, did you ever watch Gargoyles?
I did, but it didn't grab me.
Didn't grab you? That's fair. Yeah. I just like, there's something about Keith David's voice.
Exactly. I love that. Yeah. As Goliath, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing. I wasn't into it, but I didn't like not watch it. Not enough spaceships and mechs, I guess.
That's fair. That's
and Gargoyles is going to look good for an American 90s cartoon. That is, compared to his contemporary Gundam Wing, Exo Squad doesn't hold up. Is that true? Maybe. I need to do a deep dive back into Exo Squad.
Yeah.
You know, to see how it would really compare if I, during the time Exo Squad came out, knew about Gundam and had watched Gundam, and now I'm watching Exo Squad. And yeah, I'd be curious to see. Streaming on Peacock. Well, there you go. Wow, this actually came with a great ending. Now I know where to watch this.
Is this an ad?
It's like a giant ad. They go to eBay.
You know, if you're going to make a 22 minute toy commercial, maybe you should make a 5-paragraph TV show commercial.
Yeah, I know. But look, dude, this guy's giving it a 4 out of 5.
That's fair.
I think I'm going to watch this. I'm really curious, actually. And there's something about maybe my age, our age, like the animation is charming, you know, when you look back at that stuff, even though I don't know if it's really that great.
And I love and it doesn't matter if it's live action or cartoons, but I love when there's like a team of like specialized, like each person has like a specialist role. It just reminds me of like one of my favorite shows from that period was Captain Power and the Soldiers of the Future.
Yep.
You had like the one guy that was like a tanky dude. You had the one flyer, the scout, the pilot, everyone had their roles.
Well, so that's interesting because, you know, back during that time and we're around the same age, it's funny how there's shows that like I would have never watched or you didn't watch, but they were there. It's not like we had so much content. So, for instance, I never watched that, but did you watch Botsmaster?
No.
I loved Botsmaster. It was – actually, let me search for it real quick. Botsmaster. Here we go.
Sweet.
And it had toys that had 3D glasses, and then while you're watching the show, it would say, all right, laser time, and then you would put on the 3D glasses. And my favorite character, which I was trying to buy it, but it's expensive – was Ninjas his name. And he had three arms and one
Ninjas arm. Or ninjas?
No. Ninjas, the ninjas. Incorrect plural form of ninja. But what's cool is he had three arms and one of his arms was a crossbow.
Oh, that's so cool.
But he still had the two swords. This thing. Yeah.
3D laser time.
Yeah, this was really cool. And wow, I didn't even realize they had this giant mech that combined.
They basically had a Megazord and
heck yeah.
I mean that thing looks like a Bawu down there in the lower right.
Yeah, it's called the Sky Fighter. Okay, I'm going to have to look more into that.
All right, so Botsmaster explained. Here we go.
The squad explained. No, I had no idea that it had mechs. Oh, another thing about ninjas. He has rollerblades.
Wait a second. Okay, my older brother had this toy.
Oh, so you remember it. Okay, cool. Yeah, here we go.
I
was
like, wait a second. I remember I probably called him like Crossbow Rollerblades or something like that because at that age I was just like, oh yeah, the guy's got a flamethrower and rollerblades. His name's Flamethrower Rollerblades. Like that's
But no, that's just like cool stuff. Like so for me as a kid, that's like a badass toy.
Oh yeah.
A ninja with three arms and a crossbow arm and rollerblades. Like
now we're probably going to get way too far into the weeds on this, but like, did you ever get into that show, The Centurions?
No, I didn't.
See, cause that's a toy that I imagine is like right up Adam's alley because these guys were, it was a band too. These guys like had modular suits. And so the toys had like peg holes on them and you could like equip different things.
I'm actually familiar with this. I just, if it was a show, I didn't watch it.
I don't think you were missing much.
No, but it's weird because that time frame, I was watching Ghostbusters. I was watching, you know, Garfield, Inspector Gadget. Ninja Turtles came on a little shortly after this. He-Man. But yeah, not this. That
and all these shows, like they were all just made around a toy gimmick, right? It's like.
And there was a show called Mask.
Mm-hmm.
Which is also one I hear about, but I never watched that. It's like, did that really exist? Or is that more of like a time displacement thing that was added later?
Yeah, what are the, like anachronistic memories? Or I guess, is that like Mandela effect?
Where yeah, exactly. Like it's something happened where, wait, did that really? But no, that looks pretty cool. So do you remember watching the show?
Oh, yeah. My older brother and I watched that show together all the time, so.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Because, you know, looking at that, that doesn't look like an Exo Squad in terms of story, unless someone writes an article saying, hey, Centurion was the most mature, you know, anime in America.
No, that was definitely a little more G.I. Joe-y where, you know.
Yeah. Laser guns.
Yeah. That
didn't really kill anyone. Yeah. Now that's pretty cool. It's interesting because it really just shows the difference of how Japan and here's something that's not supposed to sound bad, but it almost sounds like when it comes to creative IP, not technology wise, but in terms of creative storytelling, Japan seems to be ahead. Does that seem like the incorrect take, or is that my opinion based on taste?
You know, I would say that that's a fair assessment. I would need to think about it more for sure, but it does seem to me like American media tends to be more concerned with the merchandising aspect than the storytelling aspect. And so the thing about Gundam that has made it persist for so long is not only, you know, the Gunpla and the merchandise selling for so many generations, but like people continue to still watch the cartoons. I don't know a ton of like Transformers collectors, and Transformers is still Japanese, but yeah. I don't know a ton of like Transformers toy collectors that still go back and watch old G1 Transformers.
Oh, you're right. Actually, that's it. I know some big,
same with like X-Men toy collectors. Like my little brother has the entire Marvel Legends series, and I don't think he goes back. Like he watched X-Men 97, but he doesn't go back and watch like the Spider-Man show or like the.
Yeah, that's an interesting part too, because I think I am the type, I'm that exact like what four quadrant demographic where I'm into the thing. So I watch the show, I play the game, I buy the toys. So yeah. Like with X-Men, you know, I mean, my youngest went to watch the old shows. And I was like, wow, this is actually pretty good. And
it holds up.
But, you know, it's very interesting because, yeah, when it comes to that stuff, I wonder how much, like me getting out of Star Wars in the past few years, I attribute that to, you know, some of the Disney Plus shows and the fact that they stopped making the movies in the theaters. And so the stuff I'm getting. So, okay, this kind of goes back to what you're saying. So do you think in Japan, culturally, they take storytelling super serious as if it's a foundation? It's like, okay, if we're going to make this anime and sell this toy, we at least need to make the story where it's not, I don't know if that's the word, offensive. Like an adult could watch it or a kid could watch it.
I don't know if I would make that claim broadly, like as Japanese versus American. I might make that claim about particular companies. I might make that claim about like Sunrise versus, I don't know, Hanna-Barbera or like,
you good, know, that's American. A good example because,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's some anime I've watched recently where I'm like, wow, this is good. Who did this? And it would always say Sunrise.
And, you know, going back to what we were talking about before, that explains why they would be more protective of their IP and they don't want everything on streaming platforms, like everywhere for everyone to watch. You know, a lot of these shows, I think the reason that we kind of took them for granted, like whether it was Exo Squad, is because they were just there for free, like to access, like. You didn't have to go and pay to watch these TV shows. The TV shows were just an advertisement for the thing that they really wanted you to buy. Now that said, just because it's an advertisement doesn't mean you shouldn't make it something that people actually want to consume.
Right.
And I tell people this about like digital marketing all the time, where it's like,
if you're gonna
like make a free video for people to watch that you're trying to get them to buy something after the fact, at least make the free video something that they can get something out of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's a really good point. I mean, I think that's the idea of being pro consumer by being pro business at the same time, you know, about how you're going about it. Yeah, that is, you know, that is very interesting. Yeah, no, just thinking even like modern, like even thinking right now, it's almost like they are, I wonder how much less they're worried about merchandise. It almost seems like that. Because a lot of times you hear the death of merchandise in a way, like Toys R Us closing down and all that. And it's like, so then what are they wanting consumers to spend their money on? And is it just somehow, how can they get a monthly recurring revenue? I think is what. And so because of that, they're not looking at what they could be making.
And they would rather be doing digital products than physical. And it goes to show that, like, you know, going back to what you were saying, why are we getting RX-78 and Zaku skins and Funko Pops when Witch from Mercury was the latest series and Seed Freedom? Like, where's the Seed Freedom Funko Pop? Because if you're trying to coordinate the release of the media with the release of a physical product, then why is there no correlation between the product and the media? And I think that the reason for that is that they're almost appealing to two different generations.
Exactly. And I think that gets to this thing that is a mystery to us, which is like, it seems like Bandai doesn't exactly know how to market it. And you just hit the nail on the head with like, Witch for Mercury was the latest season, but these Funko, oh, and Seed Freedom is the latest movie, yet the Funko Pops were this 0079, which could have been done 20 years ago. Were Funko Pops around 20 years ago? I don't know. But you know what I mean? It's like, it's weird that they're getting into it late, but then it's so I don't care to buy a Gundam Funko Pop, but it would be more interesting to see a Seed Freedom or like the Mighty or whatever the newer, like awesome one is supposed to be as the Funko Pop.
Yeah. Right. Because that would be coordinating with whatever is currently airing. But I think that, and you know what, maybe this is credit to Bandai, credit to Sunrise. You know, we were saying like, we don't understand the kind of decisions that they're making. Maybe the decisions that they're making are based around this idea, whether it's true or not is up for debate, but this idea that the old 0079 fans, they're going to continue to buy RX-78s. I'm going to buy the real grade 2.0.
Yeah.
Even though there's not a new show coming out.
Yeah.
But the kid who is going to watch Seed Freedom, they don't really, you know, maybe they're not going to buy a kit. So let's just give them the bare minimum. Like, you get a high grade, like,
yeah, and then let's see, because then here's kind of the same thing but different. Requiem for Vengeance coming out this fall, Western-aimed CGI Netflix show. Do you think maybe seeing the Funko Pop and the Call of Duty thing is them getting like an understanding of how to promote in that way, so by the time we get Requiem for Vengeance, we then get a more thought out or maybe proper merchandising thing? Because they already have the Gundam Universe, Gundam EX that they announced, along with the Marvel kits. But what's, you know, and probably a Robot Spirits, can't wait for that. But like, what's that other thing? And I think it's partly digital. Like, what DLC cross promotion are we going to see? With Gundam Breaker 4 too. I don't think they announced any Requiem for Vengeance stuff, but that would be
an easy one. And then, you know, like you said, I know that you love your Fortnite. being on Unreal Engine 5, it just opens up the realm for those kind of crossovers, because how easy would it be to just drag and drop that FBX file from the Requiem for Vengeance film to a video game? Like,
exactly.
It's already rigged and ready to go.
And it's funny how sometimes in the past you can make fun of devs and say they're lazy, but Epic has purposely made Unreal 5 to be interchangeable with anything. So
yeah,
but you know what? I think I'm done with Fortnite. Not realizing it, because the other day my son's like, hey, Rogue is a skin available in Fortnite. Any other time I would have bought that.
You didn't?
And I didn't buy it. I don't know why. I was like, I don't see myself playing Fortnite that much.
I think that you finished your 12-step program. That's...
Thank you. Thank you. I got Ash. I got Blade.
That's really all you need. Let's be honest. Especially when you have the Rogue figure,
exactly. You know what? The only other thing I don't have, and I keep debating, is Mondo makes those 12-inch X-Men figures, and they have one of Rogue, and it's nice. Like, I'd love to get, but it's like, no, because it's enough that sitting here on my desk, I have all these Street Fighter figures. I'm so obsessed with them. They're so good.
I mean, how often are you sitting there like just
all the time? Meetings, other things going on. I can sit here and do some random poses and all that. But
Did you happen to see that video of a Japanese game show where I love Japanese game shows.
Yeah.
This guy's about to get out of an elevator and they open the elevator and they have a giant life-size statue of Ryu doing the hurricane kick, just shouting like, it just keeps nailing him in the face. And it's like,
I love it.
So when you say, yes, the Japanese care more about storytelling than American TV shows, all I can think of is Ryu kicking someone in the face nonstop. And like, I think they do care about storytelling more than us.
Well, that's a good one. We'll end it there. I'll have to look up that clip because that sounds hilarious. But no, that Sony State of Play is about to start. I'm sure there's trailers right now, like when you go to the movie theater. So nothing going on right now. But no, guys, that was a lot of fun. Thanks for everyone that joined. Loved the chat. Oh, something else I want to add. If you guys are still here, I don't know how this is going to work, but in the description, I have a Streamlabs URL. The idea is if you use that to submit a question, that will become a segment on the next podcast or the next live stream. So links down in the description. Feel free if you have any kind of question or a comment, a concern, throw it in there, and that will be part of like the segment that we do. So
sweet.
All right. Well, cool. Well, everyone, thanks for joining. Stephen, thanks. And also shout out, you had that Thank video you. Or the live stream and video, actually, because that's been a while. You have the
busy week.
Yeah, the Gunpla Dad stuff. People need to check that out. And then you did the live stream with the Patreon stuff. So
sweet. Yeah. Cheers. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. So everyone, have a good rest of the day. We'll talk later.